Sarah is an education researcher, teacher, and a policy analyst. And Sarah, good afternoon. What I found incredibly useful in terms of helping me make up my own mind about things was your distinction between fortified and exposed schools. Perhaps you can just share the differences between a fortified school and an exposed school with our listeners.
Good afternoon, John. Good afternoon to your listeners. Yes, I think it's a useful set of terms that allow us to try and grapple with complex forms of advantage and disadvantage in our public schooling system. We often talk about the relations between different forms of cultural advantage or different forms of economic advantage, and of course historical advantage as well, where schools were built and how they are related to where parents and their families live. And of course, all the different forms of supplementation that parents can bring to a school to help it run. And fortified really is a way of trying to talk about how all these different axes come together in specific schools, only a few of them. You know, children who can speak English or Afrikaans, which are the languages of textbooks and exams, children whose parents can pay fees that allow the school to hire extra teachers, and children who can get, for example, to school via private transport and not be vulnerable to the vicissitudes of taxis and trains. Now, exposed schools experience a whole lot, but in the inverse. You know, the children are late because of public transport. The children are struggling in a fourth or fifth language, and the school is only able to work with what the government sends them. And that more or less, I would say, is about 80 to 85% of the system. So, yes, I find them useful terms to understand how different types of advantages coalesce in a few schools.
And then in terms of the issue about whether schools should be going back or not, you make the point through a wonderful exposition of how important timetables are and how timetables which are thrown out by exogenous events can completely disrupt a school. And essentially the argument is that these fortified schools can cope if there is a teacher or a pupil who tests positive. Because of the governing body posts, there is almost certainly another teacher who can step in and do that work. The class sizes are much smaller, so it's easier to divide a class into two and find a teacher to teach two halves of the same grade. All of those things are much more difficult that when you have only a bare skeleton of teaching staff, if one or two get sick or one or two are staying at home because of comorbidities, which they're allowed to do. I mean, essentially, those schools cannot meaningfully go back under a COVID-19 situation.
Bang on the money, John. You've exactly got it right. I mean, I've been talking to some teachers in what I would call exposed schools today, and all of these issues, they say they're on timetable version number 4 since Friday. it's exactly the churn and the entropy and the chaos that is trying to stabilize a basic rhythm of teaching and learning. And if you don't have enough to cover your bases, you just can't do it. You certainly can't do it safely.
And we still have circulating that letter written by a principal of one of these exposed schools as an open letter to the education authorities here in the Western Cape. And there, everything that you identify from a kind of analyst's point of view is there from the headmaster. All of these problems with sick teachers and large class sizes and minimal number of rooms into which classes can move. And I thought incredibly powerfully made the case that for schools like his, anything approaching normal education at a time like this is impossible.
Yes. I think what I found particularly fruitful is that this analysis was a PhD done pre-COVID. Now, schools that are exposed struggle to put together meaningful teaching and learning under those circumstances. And that, I think, is something we have to lose sight of, is that COVID isn't necessarily the confounding factor here. It's that these schools struggle even with what they are normal. Of course, COVID takes that another step further, but I'd like to kind of foreground that this is a struggle that I describe to principals like the one you mentioned, and it's simultaneously affirming but heartbreaking how almost every principal I talk to goes, I feel like you're talking about my school.
Now, this question. Does the fact that exposed schools make up about 85% of the schools in the country and that decent education face-to-face is almost impossible, if not actually impossible at a time like this, but it is possible within the 15% of schools that are fortified schools. What does one do? Does one allow the fortified schools to continue with face-to-face conditions because they can manage it and accept that the exposed schools are going to have to do the best they can with limited resources in a distance learning scenario? Or does one say because the exposed schools can't go back, therefore the fortified schools must not go back either?
Look, I think that that's a question about ethics and how one understands what is good for smaller groups of individuals versus understanding what's in the best interests of all of us as a collective. I think obviously it is in those students' individual interests to go back, and understandably they will be keen to do so. But it will definitely exacerbate the inequality in our country. And one has to wonder if doing something that would exacerbate that enormous chasm is a good idea for all of us as a collective. I think if you would like to believe that your fate is not tied up to the person next to you, then probably yes. But if you believe, like I do, that exacerbating inequality is going to tank us all, maybe not.
Sarah Black, Dr. Sarah Black, thank you very, very much for talking to us this afternoon. An education researcher, a teacher, a policy analyst.